I'm so excited you guys are here today. We are, like I said earlier, we're in a series that's just called Jesus. And we are looking at his life. We're looking at different gospel stories. We're looking into his character. We're looking into people who knew him. But as I was prepping this, I want to say the beginning of this message is really a lot about me. And it's because I went on a little bit of a journey. We'll get into it. I went on a little bit of a journey finding this message. God has kind of brought me on a scavenger hunt all summer. And this is the result of that scavenger hunt. So if it feels like very me-centered at the beginning, I apologize. Hopefully that'll just help you get to know me a little bit more. But that's where we're headed. So I want to ask you this. This is a common icebreaker question, but think about this. What is the best advice that you have ever received? The best advice you've ever received. So I've received a lot of advice in my day, some good and some bad advice. Not all advice is good. But if I were to think about the place, the source where I had the most good advice come from, that would be my parents. Now, I don't want to brag, but I have the world's best parents, and I'm sorry to all of you who don't have the world's best parents, but I do. But I mean that. I know that some people don't get as lucky as I do in the parent department, and I'm really sorry about that. That is hard, but the older I get, realize that I lucked out. I hit the jackpot of parents. If you've met my parents, you know they're great. But I call my parents my wise counsel. And so whenever I have a big decision, I say, I'm going to have to go ask my wise counsel. And that means I have to go ask my parents. And unfortunately, they don't make decisions for me, which I find to be really rude of them. But they do give me a lot of really good advice. And recently, they gave me a really good piece of advice. And it came pretty close after I got engaged. And so if you don't know, I'm getting married to the current sound guy back there. Yeah, he's okay. He's okay. He's fine. But I was really excited. My family was really excited. And after I kind of got over the shock of all of it, we went and had dinner with my parents. And they gave me a piece of advice. And I've heard them say this exact piece of advice to a lot of different people over my life. And they've said it to newly engaged people. They've said it to people in their first year of marriage. And they say it a lot to first-time parents. They say this one piece of advice, and they finally said it to me, and it gave me a lot of freedom in my life. And it was this. When people start to tell you about what your wedding should or shouldn't look like, or they start to tell you the horror stories of planning a wedding and how terrible it is, my mom said this. Put your hands over your ears and say, la, 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 la. My mom said, I don't have to listen to you. And I loved it so much because it's honestly great advice. Because people, not any of you, because you're all lovely people, try to give me a lot of advice. and I get overwhelmed by a lot of it. Like, I want to have my wedding or my life be what other people want it to be. And I get really overwhelmed. And so when my mom gave me permission to say, well, my mom told me I don't have to listen to you, that gave me actually a lot of freedom in my life. Because I'll be honest with you guys, I don't love planning a wedding. I don't love it. It's really stressful. I don't think I'm cut out for it. Like, ask me to plan a youth event for, 300 teenagers. I'm solid. I'm there. Like, plan a wedding for myself is, like, proving to be really stressful for me. And it's not just me, right? I think I counted, and I could be wrong, but I think we have at least 4 weddings coming up at Meridian. Some people at Meridian, at least 4. I could be missing a few here and there. But by the end of this season, guys, our congregation is going to be professional newlywed supporters. Okay, we're going to be so good at it. But I know there are so many people here who can relate to the stress of planning a wedding. And if you're single and you're here, let me tell you, like, I see you. We see you at Meridian. I spent a lot of time single in my life, and I loved that season of my life. And I know that single people are the people who often take the brunt of wedding preparations. Because, like, you're not doing anything. Here, you do everything. So I say you also relate to this. But the load of a wedding can be a lot. It's stressful. There are things happening all the time. And I make this joke to my friends a lot, and I'm going to say it, and I don't want you to judge me for it, okay? Can we go there? But I, 10 times out of 10, prefer attending a funeral than a wedding, okay? And I know that sounds weird, but hear me out. Just, like, picture this, right? Funerals, you have a short time to plan them, but people are moving a little bit slower. Memories are happy. People are exchanging memories. People are having reunions from family they haven't seen in a long time. And there's just, it's sad, but it's really beautiful. You're remembering a life. You're grieving in a way. And I think they're really beautiful. But sometimes to me, weddings can feel super fast paced and everyone's running around and it's stressful. And it doesn't matter if you're a guest or if you're the bride, everyone's running around. You're trying to figure out what to wear and you feel like everybody's going to judge you no matter what you're doing. And everyone's running around and everyone just leaves the night exhausted and glad it's over. Right? And so I kind of prefer funerals, I'll be honest. But something that has brought me so much comfort in this is knowing that weddings have always been stressful. Always. They've always been stressful. And we're going to start today in a story in the Bible about a stressful wedding. Okay? Because if you don't believe me, there are stressful weddings from the beginning of time. I'm convinced. All right? And it was this, I think in this story of this stressful, stressful wedding, some of the best piece of advice that we could ever receive was given in the middle of this story about a stressful wedding. And I want us to really hone in on this piece of advice. But I want to tell you, I said I went on a bit of a scavenger hunt finding this piece of advice. And it all started when I was at the Intern Academy retreat. And I was hearing my friend Nate Didway speak. And he kind of referenced this story. And it wasn't one of his main points, but he kind of blew right by it. And I was like, wait, what? That was the coolest thing I've ever heard. And he was like, this is the best piece of advice. And he referenced it in our first story. And I was like, I've been kind of chewing on that. And then weeks later, Daniel's preaching here at Meridian. And he's reading a completely different story. And the same advice pops up in that story. And I was like, wait a second. I just heard that piece of advice. The same advice happened again. And then I was at IYC, and we do this thing called Silence and Solitude every morning, where we take 30 minutes to be by ourselves in solitude, and we can pray or we can read our Bible. There's just time for us to all have a moment to center ourselves in the morning. And in my personal devotion time, I'm reading a completely different part of the Bible, and the same advice pops up for me. And I was like, okay, one time is something, two times is coincidence, three times, I kind of feel it's a little personal. Okay, starting to feel a little personal to me. So I just want to take you guys through. We're going to start at a wedding, and we're going to go through different family members who would have probably been around at this same wedding and would have heard this advice over and over again. And we're going to go through three different stories, and hopefully this advice speaks to you the way it spoke to me. So this story is found in John chapter 2, and last week, Brandon started us in John chapter 1, the gospel according to Brandon, according to John, according to Brandon. I don't know. It was a little, you'll have to ask him about it, but he told us that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So we know another name for Jesus is the Word, and he has a lot of titles. Jesus has a lot of nicknames. He has a lot of titles, and this is just one of them. But I want us to remember the Word, okay? So remember that. I'm going to call back to it. Remember that Jesus is called the Christ, and Jesus is called the Word, all right? So let's jump into our text. It says this. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." Now, this is the stressful wedding I was talking about, the wedding in Cana. So Jesus and all of his family and all of his friends and the disciples were at this big wedding for presumably one of his friends because his whole family was there. And the hosts, which were typically the groom's family, had run out of wine. And now this is a big no-no. This is like bad, bad, bad news. So weddings at the time were huge celebrations, and they would last a week. a week long. Some of these weddings would last a week. That sounds like my nightmare, okay? But they were weeks long. They were so long. And different ceremonies would take place at different times. And then they would have feasts every night and meals every night and wine every night. And again, the groom's family would provide food and wine for everyone for the whole week. So imagine how expensive that was, okay? And they had run out of wine in the middle of the wedding. Now, running out of food or wine would bring huge shame to the family. It would say that they were not prepared. It would say that they were poor. It would say they couldn't take care of the bride. It would bring shame on the groom's family, which would bring shame on the bride and groom. This wasn't just like a, oh no, what are we going to do? Like, we don't have drinks. People are going to get thirsty. No, this was like socially a problem. And so they were close enough with Mary, Jesus's mother, and they would run up to Mary and they said, we've run out of wine. We don't know what to do, right? She's one of their best friends. She's like, what do we do? And Mary immediately goes up to Jesus, her son, and tells him that they have run out of wine. Now, there's a lot that's unsaid here in this story. There's so much that we don't know. But somehow, Mary knows that Jesus can do something about this no wine issue, right? She knows that he has the power to do something about this no wine issue. And Jesus, we'll see, is kind of put off because he doesn't want to show everyone his miracles yet. He's not ready to do this. And so Jesus responds, woman, why do you involve me? And I know this sounds kind of derogatory. The word woman here doesn't sound as harsh as it does in English. Okay, it's more respectful in that sense. More like, ma'am, why would you involve me? If that makes sense. So don't judge Jesus in this moment. So, woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied, my hour has not yet come. His mother turns to the servants. Do whatever he tells you. I love this. Jesus, the Son of God, the Christ, the Messiah, still does not say no to his mother. Okay? When his mother asks him to do something, he realizes this was not a request, right? This was his mom telling him that they are going to help their friends at this wedding because he has the power to do something and they're going to help their friends in need. And so immediately she says, why do you involve me in this? And she says, do as they say. Do whatever he tells you to do. And we pick up, and they did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine, and he did not realize where it had come from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Then he called the bridegroom aside and said, everyone brings out the choice wine first and the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. But you have saved the best till now. This is great for a few reasons. One, the servants in the story did listen to Mary. And they did whatever Jesus told them to do. And Jesus said, take these huge vessels down to the river, get some water, come back, and then Jesus turned them into wine, and they had enough wine for the whole evening. And they got to, because they did as Mary told them to do, which was do as Jesus told you to do, they were able to participate in a miracle of Jesus, which is a complete honor, in my opinion, complete honor. And Jesus turns water into wine, and this isn't just any wine, this is good wine. And I want to touch on this because this wine is different than the wine that we have today. Right? It's not as strong, it's not as alcoholic, but it still has alcohol in it. And so the common practice of the day was they would buy some really nice wine for weddings, and then they would buy some cheaper wine. And as the night went on, they would start serving the good wine, and then as people kind of got a little bit inebriated, they would bring out the less good wine as they would go. So people wouldn't be able to complain as much or tell the difference that the quality has dropped off, right? It was kind of a money-saving tip for weddings, is that they would do this. And so the bridegroom, which is the groom, as we shortened it to groom, gets honored because they say, wow, you saved the best wine for last. And he gets not only do they not get shunned by society, they get a special honor, an extra honor for treating their guests so well at this wedding, which I think is interesting. But did you catch the advice in there? Admittingly, it was more of a command, but I love it. Do whatever he tells you. We cannot be Jesus. We cannot be the Christ. We cannot be the Word. But we can be obedient to him when he tells us to do something. We can do whatever he tells us to do. When he gives us advice, we can listen. Jesus is the one person that you don't need to cover your ears when he tells you what he thinks you should do. Okay, he gives good advice. Do whatever he tells you to do. And in this story, you might just get to participate in a miracle of Jesus. And I think that's really special. But this advice comes from Jesus' mother, all right? And we're going to look that all of Jesus' family members throughout the Bible are telling us this exact thing. Do what Jesus tells you to do. So, remember when I said that this advice keeps coming up? A few weeks ago, Daniel spoke about an event in Jesus' life called the Transfiguration. This was later on in Jesus' ministry when a few disciples got to witness Jesus in his heavenly form, shining bright and brilliant. And the voice of God came down around the disciples and spoke. Matthew 17 says, "While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, 'This is my son, whom I love, and him I am well pleased. Listen to him.'" When the disciples heard this, they fell face down on the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said, "don't be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. There it is again. Listen to him. Do whatever he says. So, you know, Jesus' earthly parents said, do whatever he tells you. Jesus' heavenly father says, do as he says. Listen to him. Take his advice. Listen to his direction. This advice has to be important. It is everywhere, especially among the people who knew Jesus best, right? Because our family knows us. Jesus' family knew him. And their advice to anyone was do what he tells you to do. Listen to him. And I want to say, too, if you're a parent or you're in charge of kids in this room, when you ask someone to listen to you, do you want them to just hear your words that you're saying? No, the expectation is to do what I told you to do. I want you to hear the words I say and do them. That's listening. So that's what God is saying. Do what he says. Listen to him. Now, again, this advice comes up again with one of Jesus' family members. Jesus' earthly brother, James, from what we know, wrote a letter that was passed around to different churches, and he had some advice for Christians who were trying to live like Jesus. And again, he knew Jesus really well, so he had some good advice for how to live like Jesus. I will say, if you read the book of James, okay, it's a little pointy, okay? If you want to get beat up a little bit, all right, and challenged a little bit, I recommend reading the book of James. It's really good, kind of harsh, all right? You will feel it tug at you a little bit. So just warning, content warning on the book of James. All right, but he says this in James chapter 1, starting in verse 19. It says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says." Do you remember one of Jesus' nicknames? What was it? The word. Okay, here we have James, and I don't think that James is like, well, does James call him that? If you read the book of James, yes, okay? He knows exactly what he's saying here. He says, do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what he says. So we have Mary, the mother of James and Jesus, says, do whatever he says. God the Father, Yahweh, says, listen to him. And we have James, the brother of Jesus, who says, do what it says. James goes on to say this in verse 23. It says, "Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do." The perfect law. Now, this could refer to a lot of things, but based on the rest of the book of James, scholars are pretty sure that this is referring to either Matthew 22, which Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, Or John 13 that says, a new command I give to you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Okay, loving other people, doing the word, listening to, it's not just good enough to know we should love one each other. We should do that. We should actually love one another. That is what James is saying. So if we do whatever he says, loving our neighbors, for instance, we will be blessed if we do that. We will be blessed in that endeavor. And it seems so simple. Do what he says. But James touches on a point that is so relevant to Christians, both then and now, that we love to say what Jesus said. We are really good at saying what Jesus said. But we struggle to do what Jesus said to do. And he says this exact thing in James 2, verses 14 through 17. It says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or a sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, is, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead. I told you, Book of James is harsh. But we learned this at IYC, that we will be known by our fruit. We will be known by the fruit we produce in our life. And just because there was a cross or an ichthus fish carved into the trunk of our tree, it does not mean that it will be bearing good fruit. We can know the commandments of Jesus without actually doing them. We can know to love our neighbor as ourselves. We know we should reconcile with others. We know to pray for our enemies and bless them. We know to give to those who are in need without making it about ourselves. We know not to store up earthly treasures or hoard wealth. We know not to judge others, especially non-believers. We know to treat others how we would like to be treated. We know we are to disciple other people to Christ. We know we are supposed to forgive. We know we are supposed to care for the young children and help guide them to Christ. We know we are supposed to feed, clothe, and pray and care for the least of society. But do we do it? Do we actually do whatever he tells us to do? Because sometimes I feel like we can say, well, I know I can never be Jesus, so I'll just tell other people what he says, and then we never change any of our actions. But that is not enough. It's not what Jesus asks us to do. We're not actually listening to God when we say that. We get so caught up in telling other people how to live that we forget that we are first and foremost supposed to be following the advice of Jesus. And when we do what Jesus says, what we says to do, we will be blessed. James tells us that in his word. We will be blessed if we do what we are told to do. Other people will be blessed. We will be known as people who love and serve and forgive and help other people. This is why the people who knew Jesus best, his mother, his father, and his brother all told us, don't just know what he says. Do whatever he says. The servants in Cana did, and they got to be part of Jesus' first public miracle. Peter, John, and James, the other James, did this, and they got to see the heavenly face of Jesus revealed to them in person because they did as Jesus said to do. James tells us that we just have faith, we will be blessed. But if we never actually follow through on what Jesus commands, we will end up with a faith that is dead on arrival. So it's an empty clang, right? It means very little to believe what Jesus said, to believe that Jesus said who he says he was, and then not love your neighbor who is different than you. Or hoard wealth and resources when others are in need. Or ignore the children of the church and wait for them to grow up before you want to worship with them. It does very little to your faith. It means very little to believe that Jesus was. James tells us even the demons believe that Jesus was who he says he was. But if we don't do what he says to do, then it doesn't mean much. Sorry to end on a harsh note, but as the band comes back up, I want to leave you with some hope. Jesus gives good advice, and Jesus gives good commandments, and his family gave us the best advice. Advice that I want to take in my life, and I feel God commanding me to take this summer. And advice that I would like all of you to take with me as I'm learning to do this in my life. I want to actually do what Jesus said to do. I want to actually love people with my actions as well as my words. I want to actually stand up for people who are being bullied. I want to actually feed people. I want to actually be generous. I want to actually do whatever he says to do. And Meridian, it's my prayer that we will turn to ourselves and we will look in the mirror and we will say, do whatever he says. And then I pray we will leave the mirror and do exactly that. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for today. Thank you for giving us the opportunity again and again and again to be obedient. Thank you for being there with us when we aren't obedient. God, I pray that you will be with everyone in this room to help us be more like you. Take more steps. Thank you for Jesus' wonderful family that he had when he was on earth. Thank you for their wonderful advice of saying, do whatever he says to do. We might not know where we're going. We might not know which way is up and which way is down. But we know that if we do what Jesus says to do and love others well and care for those in need, that we cannot go wrong. Thank you for making a really hard thing that simple. And thank you for being with us even when we mess it up. I pray that you will help give us courage to go out and actually do what you said to do. We love you so much. And in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.